This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's time. Time for your weekly appointment with the only man who could host a four-hour Saturday tour de force of sports talk on CBS Sports Radio. Why? Why did we select this man to undertake this Herculean task? Because, well, his name is on the marquee. Here he is, Robin Lundberg.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. And it is coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away $2.5 million prizes during Super Bowl 55 that could be used to buy your dream home. See rules and enter for free today at rocketmortgagesquares.com. You know, Philip Rivers' Hall of Fame status was like immediately the reaction I think people had to him announcing his retirement. It's funny. Like, that's where everybody's head went at the same time. Is Philip Rivers a Hall of Famer? Philip Rivers has decided to hang it up. But is he a Hall of Famer, though? Rather than, like, great career, well done. Is he a Hall of Famer? and it's one of those things, like, sometimes, you know, I try to look for a unique angle, perspective, questions, topics, but other times you just don't blow the layup. And I feel like that's such a layup there with Rivers and where everybody's head went at the same time. So here's my thoughts on Philip Rivers' Hall of Fame status. When you tell me the name Philip Rivers, do I think immediately all-time great quarterback, legendary quarterback? No, I don't. He was not the player that, you know, I thought would strike fear in the opponent in a big game. I never thought of him as much of a big game kind of guy who dominated in those situations. He's 5-7 overall in the playoffs. He only won more than one playoff game one season in 2007, 2-1 in the playoffs, getting to the AFC Championship. But otherwise, 1-done or 1-1 in every playoff run. With that said, I mean, the guy did have a tremendous career. I don't want to sit here and bash him. He just, you know, if your first test of Hall of Fame is like just that immediate, like, of course, like that, he doesn't pass that test. He doesn't pass that immediate, no doubt about it. Of course, you're an idiot for even posing the question test. Statistically, it's hard to argue against him. I mean, he had a long career. He had plenty of winning seasons, double-digit wins in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons. You know, an overall career record of 134, 106, and 0, no ties. Completed 65% of his passes, 421 touchdowns to just 209 interceptions. Number 5 all-time in passing yards. Number 5 all-time in passing touchdowns. So when you take all that into consideration, I just don't know how you keep him out. So he doesn't pass the initial, oh my God, of course he's a Hall of Famer test. But I think he does pass the, look at the career he had. You know, can you really not put him in? test. The only thing that I think even makes it a debate for me is the Eli Manning deal. Because if Eli Manning is a debatable Hall of Famer, which he shouldn't be, then Phillip Rivers is a debatable Hall of Famer. Because I'd put Eli in before I'd put Phillip Rivers in. You know, I don't think the gap in Phillip Rivers' statistical advantage over Eli, which is not huge, overcomes the fact that, Eli is a two-time Super Bowl MVP. You know, he didn't luck his way into those Super Bowls. He was a driving force in the Giants winning those Super Bowls. I think Eli's both top 10 in passing yards and passing touchdowns. And, you know, if you compare them statistically, it's not like a landslide in Phillip Rivers' favor. Phillip Rivers wins that statistical battle and wins it. You know, it's not like a tie. He wins it, but it's not like a laughable gap. And I would say that what Eli did in the postseason makes up for it and surpasses that gap. So I think both of those guys will get in. I think both of those guys should be in. But if you're going to debate Eli Manning, then I think you also have to debate Phillip Rivers. 855-212-4227. Let's go to Mike in New Hampshire. Mike, you're on the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, how are we doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Not bad. I got something to say about Tom Brady. I got something to say about Phillip Rivers.
Okay, go ahead.
So I don't know how you guys can doubt Tom Brady. I mean, you guys say that you would never bet against Patrick Mahomes, but what about Tom Brady?
Who's you guys?
Well, just think about it this way.
No, no, but when you say you guys, who's you guys?
Everyone on sports talk radio, bet like they're betting against Tom Brady this weekend.
All right, I'm just saying, like you could. I'm responsible for what I say. So, all right, go ahead.
Fair enough. I'm just going based off of what I hear on the radio, not just people in general.
All right,
they're betting against Tom Brady this weekend. But when he gets to the playoffs, he turns into a different animal. He didn't turn the ball over once last week, and he's not going to turn the ball over again. And he's going to turn into Psycho Tom and throw for three or four touchdowns and not turn the ball over. And I don't know. I have a hard time betting against that because that's what he does in the playoffs every single year. Turns it up a notch.
Well, he's never, he's lost in the playoffs before. It's not as if, you know, he's undefeated in the playoffs. I'm not betting. Look, I'm not in no way slighting Tom Brady, and I'm not doubting Tom Brady. If I were betting against Tom Brady, it's because I think the Packers are a superior team. And the guy on the other side, the quarterback, is no slouch either. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is obviously an incredible player. But Brady, you know, is – there's nothing that would surprise me with him anymore. I wouldn't count him out from winning the Super Bowl this year, but I would bet against him in the sense that I think the Packers are going to win the game. And he's not undefeated, like I said, in the playoffs. And I think that the Buccaneers should have lost to the Saints last week had New Orleans not had a holding call on a punt and had Cook not fumbled the ball. And maybe even if they had, you know, Taysom Hill available to give them some punch at the quarterback position, which Drew Brees didn't have. I mean, the best throw of the night was Jameis Winston when he came in and he was wide open. But that still was,
right.
You know, Drew Brees just couldn't stretch the field.
Which was awesome, by the way, because it was just such a gutsy call to have Jameis Winston go in and throw that touchdown pass against his old team. I loved it. No coach in the league would ever do that, except for the Saints. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was a great play call, and thanks for the call. As far as the, you know, the Saints overall, like I said, they just didn't have the quarterback play to win that game. To overcome. The points they took off the board for themselves, because that punt return is a touchdown, and it goes back. The Cook fumble was at least a field goal, and they were sort of asserting control of the game at that point, and it turned into a touchdown for Tampa. Tampa capitalized on New Orleans' mistakes and won that game. Otherwise, I think New Orleans wins that game. Let's go to Jimmy in Illinois. Jimmy, you're up next here on CBS Sports.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. As far as storylines, like for the quarterbacks, really looking forward to seeing is I kind of really want to see Tom Brady make it again, because not only is it him going to the NFC and doing it in another conference, and not only is it him doing it without Bill Belichick and the Patriots, But when you think this guy cannot make the history books anymore, he already was in the first Super Bowl for overtime, to go into overtime when they came back and beat Atlanta. But this would also be the first Super Bowl where the host team makes it there, because it's in Tampa this year, I believe. So, like, when you think that he can no longer make another history in the history books for some other mark, here is an opportunity again for him.
I mean, yeah, there's a, you know, you almost, it gets hard to even come up with anything new or interesting to say about him at that point. It's almost like greatness to the level of being boring, right?
Yeah. It's just one of those things like, okay, he's done it all, and he goes, no, there's one more thing I can do, and here it is, let me do it.
It's Tom Brady, well, like LeBron James, right? Anybody else? Serena, in individual sports, you know, Serena Williams in tennis and Floyd Mayweather in boxing, though I wouldn't think of a fight against a Paul brother would add to that. Tiger Woods, I suppose, in golf, though he's still trying to catch, you know, track people down. I think in team sports, it's LeBron and Brady. And you get to the point, like, with the Lakers this year, like, what else are you going to say? Like, all right, they're awesome. He's awesome. You know, he just won his third title with a third different team, his fourth title overall, his third finals MVP. He did it at, you know, an older age. He's 36 years old, still the best. Tom Brady, 43 years old, still, you know, right near the best of the game. Might do it with another team. Even if he doesn't, I think he's already had a successful season. Like I said before, I don't think he has to win a Super Bowl to solidify the achievement of going to a different organization after the comfort level and spending his entire career under Bill Belichick with the New England Patriots. Like, he's already proven that, you know, he wasn't a product of that. I always joke about, like, when people say somebody's a system player, well, then everybody would run that system, right? If he's a system player, just copy that system and you're in business. You know, he brought the system with him and adapted it with Arian's system. I mean, you know, the Arians likes that deep drop, throw down the field offense, and Brady and Arians have created a little bit of a hybrid of that with that deep drop, throw down the field system and the quick stuff that Brady likes to do, you know, quick slants and check downs and all that stuff. He's had a legendary career. There's just no other way to put it. And I guess you look at the motivation of all-time greats like that, and maybe he was motivated, right? Like, you have to tap into the these reserves. You know, Michael Jordan, what's the meme? And I took that personally. We know about Michael Jordan using perceived slights to fuel himself. Last year, LeBron kept posting Wash King because he had heard, you know, whoever was saying he was past his prime. And even if it was one person or whatever, or people on Twitter, he used that, you know, Wash King, after that rough season, the first season in LA, to motivate himself. And maybe Brady has used the idea that, you know, he couldn't do it away from New England as that motivation for him. Maybe he's just self-motivated in the sense of the way he approaches it, but it does seem to be a common theme with those guys, is that they find something. They find something new to help them continue to try and sharpen the sword, if you will, when there really is nothing. I mean, Tom Brady really didn't have anything left to prove. He was the GOAT before he went to Tampa, you know? I think the only thing that could have hurt him is if he just flopped epically in Tampa, and he didn't. So what do you say? And maybe that is, you know, part of the motivation he used. You know, not only did he want to go somewhere else and get a change of scenery, obviously he has way more guys to throw to in Tampa than he did in New England. The talent level offensively, the gap between New England and Tampa is enormous. But, you know, I, even after the first week of the season, wondered if maybe, you know, he was on the decline and made a mistake. After the Patriots signed Cam Newton, you know, you could have argued that at that point in time, hey, look, what if things work out for Cam and the Patriots? Could they actually come out better in that whole thing. And Brady's made all that look foolish. Brady's made people who said he was done a couple of years ago look foolish. We should have kept Jimmy Garoppolo. he looked foolish even. That's a New England thing, but you get the point. There's nothing else to say about the guy. And really, it's I hope I've learned my lesson. I'll wait until it's over before I say it's over now. And as far as what he's able to accomplish in Tampa, I do wonder if that, how much of that is real as the motivation and the chip on his shoulder that he's used. The fact that there were people who believed that it was more Belichick than Brady. There were people who believed that, if he hadn't played his whole career in New England, things wouldn't be the same. Or there were people that think, he benefited from the structure around him in New England. And those things are still true, right? Like, it is still true that he benefited from playing in New England. It is still true that he benefited in playing under Bill Belichick. But it's clearly not true that he is a creation of that. He is not a creation of that. That amplified what he was. It helped make his career what it is today. But I think he's already shown in Tampa that, he's Tom Brady. And you have Tom Brady at quarterback, there's a good chance you're going to be playing in the Super Bowl. You might as well be written into the conference championship game. I mean, I don't know how many conference damn championship games the guy's played in at this point. I'm sure I could tally it up and count, but it is a lot. I mean, he's played in almost 10 Super Bowls now. on the verge of getting to that number. Like, he could eventually get there at some point. He's already played and he's lost two to the Giants and lost to the Eagles, right? So that's 9. I mean, what a career. What a career. And to do it again right now, there's no dismissing it. There's no arguing. You're just a straight up hater if you're fixing your mouth to say anything to take away from what Tom Brady's accomplished, or if you're fixing your fingers to type anything that takes away from what Tom Brady has accomplished, because there's nothing else to say. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. At Robin Lundberg on Twitter. We lost a legend in the sports world yesterday. The great Henry Aaron, died yesterday. He had lived a long life, obviously, dying at 86 years old. But he's one of those figures that you hear about, he almost feels like a folk character, a tall tale in a sense, because, he played 1954 to 1976. Obviously, I wasn't born in 1976, so I don't have the frame of reference to his career, but we are joined by someone who has a frame of reference to his career and some personal experience with Hank Aaron to, remember the legacy that he left, and that's coming up next. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio, and when a legend like Hank Aaron dies, especially someone like Aaron, who I, hear of, and it almost feels like folklore because of what he was able to accomplish, but obviously playing his career before I was born, I think it's always helpful to add some context to what he was actually able to do as a player and the challenges he faced in doing so in his time. And to help me do so, I'm joined now by a friend of mine, my old boss at Sports Illustrated and the co-director of the Hammer of Hank Aaron film, Josh Oshinsky. First of all, Josh, how you doing, man?
Robin, what is up, my man? I miss you, buddy.
Same here, man. And you know, if I know two things about you, one is you have an extreme passion for documentary filmmaking, documentary features, and two is you have an extreme passion for baseball. When this project came together, I think it was in 2015, what was the impetus for it at that point in time to profile Hank Aaron at that moment?
So this was for a series called Major League Legends, and this is something that I think baseball is still struggling with, which is how to take the, you said it, the myths, the legends of, you know, that everybody knows by one name, the Babe, right? Ted the Splinter, Hank, and turn them into a conversation that's just a little bit cooler. We should really be talking about Henry Aaron in a completely different way that's not so staid. He was a badass, and I wish there was a way for the national conversation to get that sense across, right? That you know, when he grew up in Mobile, Alabama, he was growing up in the equivalent of the basketball scene in L.A. today. But instead of Bronny James and Zaire Williams, he was growing up at a time where it was Willie McCovey and Satchel Paige and Billy Williams, right? That's really what we wanted to get across with this series, and what I still to this day would love to figure out a way to get across to people about Henry Aaron.
Yeah, I saw some of it last night. It was airing on MLB Network. I think it's also available on Amazon Prime Video if you want to check out the movie itself. And yesterday, Josh, you tweeted that you spent a day at Mr. Aaron's house once. We made a movie about him, obviously the one we're referencing. And you wrote, his life was hard in ways most of us can never understand, and his accomplishments truly staggering against what he stared down daily. Obviously, he's chasing Babe Ruth. Obviously, there is just disgusting and vile racism, you know, that he's facing in doing so. But when you say his life is hard, can you contextualize that a little bit so people understand just what this man persevered through in accomplishing what he did?
So I think everyone knows to some degree about the letters that he got and the fact that, you know, the FBI had to protect his daughter because when he was chasing down a white icon in Babe Ruth, there were plenty of people who did not want to see him accomplish this, right? I feel like that is canon. What I think a lot of people don't know is that growing up in Mobile, Alabama in the 30s and 40s, the KKK would go to his front lawn, put a cross up, and burn it. And his mom had to have him hide under the bed. That was what he grew up with, right? When he was looking at his dad as a 10-year-old and said, "Hey, I want to be a fighter pilot." His dad said, no, we're not fighter pilots. You should lower your sights, right? And it's only because he had truly preternatural talent. I mean, I think the other thing that people talk about with Henry Aaron is that he was absolutely a prodigy. He was Mozart of baseball. This guy went from playing softball in the backyard as a teenager and hitting bottle caps with the broomstick to instantly dominating what has now been actually defined as professional baseball in the Negro Leagues with the Indianapolis Clowns. And then as a 19-year-old, integrating the Sally League. So you want to talk about a challenge? I mean, absolutely all respect in the world to Mr. Jackie Robinson, but Henry Aaron was below the Mason-Dixon. Henry Aaron was in Jacksonville, Florida with Felix Mantilla, and the crowd was chanting Gator Bait at them. And Felix Mantilla turned to his teammate and said, "What's Gator Bait?" And his teammate said, "You." Right? This is the world that Henry Aaron grew up in. And he went from integrating the Sally League to playing in Eau Claire and dominating, just dominating. This is the first time the guy was on a plane was when he went and was signed. I mean, he had an incredibly humble beginnings in Mobile, Alabama. And, you know, he went instantly to dominating in Eau Claire. And then the next thing you know, he's in Milwaukee. But after he was in Milwaukee, the Braves moved the franchise to Atlanta. So Hank Aaron became the very first African-American professional athlete star below the Mason-Dixon. And I just don't think he's sort of looked at in those terms. It's sort of seen like Jackie Robinson did all the heavy lifting, which sort of paved the way for everyone to come after. Henry Aaron did a lot of paving, a lot of paving.
But look, I mean, yeah, we still see these issues today. So obviously they didn't go away when Jackie Robinson breaks the color barrier. And you just did a good job, I think, you know, laying out some of what he faced to have the career he had, where 3,000 hits without the home runs. Robin Ludberg talking to Josh Oshinsky, who co-directed the Hammer of Hank Aaron documentary. It's been airing on MLB Network, Amazon Prime Video, and this was not like glamour days of the professional sports profession either. I was watching some of the movie last night, Josh, you referenced the Negro Leagues and the Indianapolis Clowns. I think, you know, he was making $200 a month when he first broke into baseball.
Yeah, $200 a month. I mean, for Henry Aaron, and many of the stars, by the way, at the time, they weren't playing for the money, right? I mean, that was certainly a thing with many. I once was lucky enough, this is probably the most amazing day I've ever been able to spend in my professional career, was lucky to produce a panel. This was in Cincinnati in 2015 for the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. We did a panel for MLB Network, and it was Willie Mays, Henry Aaron, Sandy Koufax, and Johnny Bench in a room, just the four of them. And Bob Costas narrated a conversation with them. And you know, the conversation was free-flowing and absolutely incredible. I think I was one of, you know, six other people in the room to witness that conversation, which was absolutely, as a baseball geek, one of the coolest things you could ever imagine in your life. But the conversation often turned to the fact that they had to find other ways to make money later in life, which is why autographs were such an issue to this day for someone like Sandy Koufax. Right. It wasn't about the money like it is today. I mean, these guys would all have hundreds of millions of dollars in today's time.
You did also spend some time with Hank Aaron himself in making the movie. And when I, you know, see him interviewed over the years and heard him speak, the word that comes to mind for me from the outside looking in is dignified. He just seemed a man who carried himself with a lot of dignity. But what was your personal experience with Hank Aaron, you know, one on one?
Henry, dignified is the perfect word, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention his wife, Billy Aaron, as well. And by the way, condolences to you know, everybody in that family, but especially to Billy. I mean, Billy was the epitome of class. We were a production crew in the home of a legend that is not always the most well-received thing in the world. And Billy put out a plate for us. You know, she said, here's some chicken and rice, guys. I mean, Billy was absolutely lovely and dignified and an incredible host. And, you know, Henry let us spend 6 hours in his home, in his personal home. It was really just an amazing day. And you know, every interaction that I had, in fact, I think a good way to look at it. We had on our crew, our main VP for that film was a gentleman named Alex Anya, who you might know, Robin. And he was the only of our crew, the only DP who was African American. And after the film wrapped, Henry Aaron sent him a personal note. He autographed the picture and said, you know, to Alex Anya from Henry Aaron, you know, thanks for making this film. And really, it just, I think that gesture alone, not asked for, unprompted, sort of epitomizes the class and dignity that someone like Mr. Aaron has.
It was obviously a story worth telling then, now, and forever, as Hank Aaron, a legend, died yesterday at the age of 86. Josh, really appreciate you coming on and helping to, you know, I think illuminate to some people who obviously didn't see him in real time, just what he went through, how good he was, and what, you know, his life and legacy in the game will mean.
My pleasure, Robin. I hopefully we get to talk and maybe get together at one point in better times coming down the road. Robin, it's so great. It's been an honor to be on your show. I wish you nothing but the best, buddy.
Robin Lundberg, CBS Sports Radio, and you. Let the fun begin. Here's Robin Lundberg.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. And I'm glad we spent some time there remembering Hank Aaron and sort of contextualizing his career and his life as well. Because, you know, sometimes you can have a tendency when you're talking about legends who were before your time to just like sort of acknowledge, yeah, they were great, and then move past that. But the lives they lived and their accomplishments were very real. And that obviously was the case for Hank Aaron, who went through tremendous hatred and vile, you know, messages sent his way and tough just conditions in general, like living conditions to get to the career that he did and become the all-time home run leader, still recognized by many as the quote-unquote true home run king. And as I've said, you know, when I see him interviewed or I saw him interviewed, he just seemed like a man of tremendous dignity and carried himself in such a dignified fashion. So his story is one that obviously deserved to be told and deserves to be told for years and years and years to come, really, forever. Hank Aaron dying yesterday at the age of 86. There is another death that I think I'd be remiss not to cover for just a second, as it happened this morning. It is the broadcast industry that I work in, and a broadcasting legend, and Larry King has died at 87 years old. Obviously, you know, a lot of people know him from CNN and various other outlets, but a long, 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 long career. I mean, this is not the kind of industry where you can even guarantee, you know, to have a career that runs, you know, the way you want it to. You know, there's lots of ups and downs that can come in working in this business. You know, whenever anybody asks me, I do a lot of, you know, I get a lot of kids, I don't say kids like it's dismissive, but, you know, younger people who will reach out to me and say, hey, can we hop on the phone or exchange emails for advice or something like that? And I try to do it because, you know, I would want somebody to do it for me. And, you know, they'll ask me, like, what's the thing you need to know to get into it? I was like, you really got to want it. It's, you know, job security is not a thing necessarily in this industry, and obstacles are things you're definitely going to have to clear. Let me not spin it the wrong way here. I don't want to say it, you know, it's the worst lot in life. I understand there are so many people that would love to be doing something in this industry, and it's incredibly rewarding to be able to work and do something where your passion is your profession. And that is a rare thing. I'll never take that kind of thing for granted. But one of the messages I do give is, like, you know, make sure you want it. If you want it, go for it. I would never tell you not to go for it, but it's something, you know, you got to work at, and it's something you got to work through. And to be able to be on the air that long is an accomplishment. I don't care what the platform, who you are, what you thought, anybody thought subjectively about it. Objectively, it's incredible to have that kind of career. So I want to, again, say RIP to the great Hank Aaron, then an RIP today to broadcasting legend Larry King. He was hospitalized recently with COVID-19. I don't know what the official cause of death is, but Larry King is dead at the age of 87. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Let's go to Mike in Birmingham, New York. Mike, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Robin. It's actually Binghamton.
Oh, what did I say? I've had a lot of calls. I know Binghamton. I live in the,
I know.
You know, I'm in New Jersey. I have a lot of callers from Birmingham, and I think that just came out.
I figured everybody knows, has a story about Binghamton, at least from downstate. But hey, man, it's great to talk to you. I think you do one of the best jobs on radio. I wanted to posit a couple things for you, Heavy Ponder, but I think if you consider the five tools, the consistency, his prime, the cumulative numbers, and then if you take a look at Hank Aaron's postseason numbers, you could make an incredibly colorable argument that he's the greatest baseball player of all time, particularly when you double down with the he played post-integration, unaffected by performance-enhancing drugs, and the fact that he played in the Deep South. And think about what Hank Greenberg had to go through around the time he's trying to break Babe Ruth's single-season record and how much anti-Semitism. And then presumably you magnify that by, you know, some factor for what Hank had to go through and trying to do the same thing with the career record. Secondly, is this the greatest assemblage of physical, pure physical talent we've ever seen in a Final Four QB matchup?
Pure physical talent? I don't know. I mean, maybe you're right. I guess the, you know, the funny thing is, like, Brady's considered the greatest of all time. Does anybody consider him the most talented necessarily of all time? There must be, you know, there has to be some level of crazy talent in order to achieve what he achieved. But I think with Brady, there's so much that goes into what he does, and a lot of it's you know, upstairs and being able to read the situation and change the play at the line of scrimmage. But then you have to have the precision in the delivery that he's had. But as far as just quality, yeah, I can't recall, you know, when Josh Allen's the worst of the bunch, and I don't mean that in an insulting way, because he's on the come up and is incredibly physically gifted. Yeah, you're looking at one of the greatest groups of finalists that the NFL's ever seen.
Yeah, and I guess that was my point. I mean, Brady being at his advanced stage doesn't have the arm. I think he always had a very underrated arm, actually. If you watch those old games at Foxborough in the deep, you know, in the middle of winter, ripping that ball through, the wind up there. But now you're talking Mahomes and Allen and Rodgers. Those are three. You could argue those are three of the top five quarterback arms of all time in one weekend. And for the older crowd, I think you could point back to 73 and say Greasy Stabler, Tarkenton, and Staubach. And then in the early 90s, you had Young, Kelly, Aikman, and Marino 1 year, and then substituted out the next year for Montana. So in terms of greatness, maybe it's not at this point. It might be a little bit early for Josh. But in terms of pure physical talent, I think we're talking this is the best season. So thank you very much, man.
No, I appreciate you calling. As far as Brady's arm, too, of course he had a great arm. Like you can't do what he's done in his career without a great arm. And, I'll go back to the Super Bowl they lost to the Giants, actually, the undefeated team that lost. That last play, or not the last play necessarily, but the last drive that they had where they barely had any time left, and he aired the ball out to Randy Moss. I mean, that was a hell of a throw. And it probably, you know, gave Giants fans a moment when it felt like that might almost be caught and that outcome could have been different. Let's go to Gary in Jacksonville. Gary, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Good morning, Rockin' Robin. How are you?
What's good, man? How are you?
Good, good. You know, I got to go with the home team tonight. I figure between 10 to 13 points, that's what I'm – because, you know, Tampa's tradition of – I don't think they'll be able to handle that cold weather. And I just think Josh Allen isn't experienced enough playoff-wise to even though Mahomes is – probably played in the same amount of games as Mahomes or just about, but I just like the home teams. And what I don't get, Robin, is why are people so ready to give up on Tua being a big Dolphin fan? I mean, you surround him with more talent. I remember Peyton Manning his first year, Troy Aikman his first year. They were miserable. Imagine if people gave up on them when they first started out.
Yeah, I think the concerns – that they have is that, he might not be able to make those throws deep down the field or to the sidelines. And that's from what I've read about the internal concerns. You're absolutely correct from an experience standpoint. There is no way they should be giving up on him based on 1 year from just an experience standpoint and a learning standpoint. I think the concern would be if you just don't believe he has the requisite talent. That is what will be answered. I'm not a quarterback evaluator. I didn't watch, I haven't watched their practices. I'm not a scout. I didn't see him play enough to have an informed decision. But I think that's where the question truly lies. You know, you don't give up on him because of 1 year. The issue is, you know, do they think he has the abilities after seeing it to get to that level that they need him to be at? But he certainly didn't have the personnel around him to amplify the skill sets that we do know he does have. And it's a far cry from the situation he was at, relatively speaking, in Alabama, where we know they have the talent on that team year in and year out. 855-212-4227 at Robin Lundberg on Twitter. That's RobinLundberg. So both the Buccaneers and the Bills are the underdogs this weekend. They're both 3.5-point dogs as we speak. Not huge underdogs by any means. It's not like it'd be a shocking outcome if either one of them won. But which of those two teams do you think has the better chance at pulling the upset this weekend? Is it the easy instinctual response of, well, of course it's Tom Brady. It's Tom Brady and the Bucs. Or is it actually Buffalo, given that, you know, Patrick Mahomes just cleared concussion protocol? I mean, we don't know how that's going to impact him in the game. And the Bills have been playing as well as anybody since December. I mean, obviously, the odds makers say that the chances are the same, essentially, for each team. So, more likely upset, even if it's not a big upset, Tampa Bay and Tom Brady beating Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, or Josh Allen and Buffalo getting by Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs? What do you think? 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Any portion of the show you missed, you grab the podcast, radio.com, CBSSportsRadio.com. It's all archived there. But right now, asking you, better chance at the upset, the Bucks or the Bills? 855-212-4227. It's the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.